This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. Now, I just want to say that we have a super dedicated collection of coaches and guests that come on the TriDot Podcast. I mean, many folks make many inconvenient recording hours work with their calendar, all to bring you industry-leading knowledge every single week. And we may have really outdone ourselves this time with our first ever Tri-Continental Podcast recording. As we record, it is midnight here in Texas for me. It is 4 p.m. in Brisbane, Australia, and it is 6 a.m. on the southern coast of the United Kingdom. So may the coffee flow freely and may the conversation be as festive as ever. Joining us from Brisbane, Australia, where it's 4 p.m., is Taryn Richardson. Taryn is an advanced sports dietitian who specializes in helping triathletes unlock their potential with the power of nutrition. She is the founder and director of Dietitian Approved, as well as the host of the Triathlon Nutrition Academy podcast. She has worked with endurance athletes for over 13 years, spending 6 years as the sports dietitian for Triathlon Australia. She describes herself as a retired age group triathlete herself, but we'll see about that. I'm trying to talk her out of retirement with each episode when she comes on. Taryn, welcome back to the TriDot Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I hear that our last episode that we did together was one of the greatest of all time episodes.
It was outstanding. It set the record, Taryn. I think right now it is number 8 on our all-time downloaded list. Right in front of it, in 7th place for reference, was our first ever episode that's been out now for 3 years. So it's catching up and gaining steam fast. It set a new record for the most listens we've had for an episode in its first week since being posted. So thank you and Dr. Krista Austin for talking about body weight, race weight, and relates to triathlon.
Yeah, I told you two dietitians are better than one, but good to know that triadotters are really keen to learn about nutrition, and hopefully we can drop some more nutrition knowledge bombs today with Andy on board. And also, geez, hats off to you for recording this in the middle of the night to accommodate our 3 time zones. We're just crazy.
Yes. Yep. This is going to be a blast. I can't wait. I hope it's worth it. And I hope everything I say is coherent. And good morning from the United Kingdom. We've got Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration. Andy is a sports scientist with a degree in sports and exercise science from the University of Bath. An expert in sweat, dehydration, and cramping, Andy has worked with multiple Formula One racing, NBA, NBL, MLB, and Premier League sports teams, as well as many professional triathletes. An elite level triathlete in his younger days, Andy has finished in the top 10 of many Ironman events, as well as winning an Xterra world title. Andy, the last time we chatted, we were on the island in Kona for the World Championships. How the heck are you?
I'm really good. Thanks, mate. It's good to see you again. Not in person this time, but doing well.
Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool-down. Now, on the cool-down today, Vanessa will be chatting with TriDot coach Jason Verbracken and TriDot ambassador David Heckman. Now, David is a visually impaired athlete who just finished Ironman California with Coach Verby as his guide. Hang around until the cool-down to hear about their experience in Sacramento. Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders powered by Live Steady deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel many of my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. That's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
For today's warm-up question, we are going to do a little bit of a triathlon would you rather type question. These always get great debate from our community on the I Am Triadot Facebook group. So I'm excited to hear what everybody thinks here. Hopefully I have concocted a good one. So Taryn, Andy, would you rather win one free superbike of your choosing, win free running shoes for the rest of your life, or win top-of-the-line wetsuits for you and a dozen of your closest triathlon friends? Andy Blow, what would you rather have here?
There is no contest on this one for me. Running shoes for the rest of my life would not only tick a massive box, but it would save me a fortune, because the rate at which I plow through shoes, and running shoes in particular, is absolutely legendary. The other good thing, because the last option of having wetsuits for your friends as well, obviously you're going to feel a bit self-conscious if you don't choose something there. Well, the good thing in our office at Precision Fuel and Hydration is we have this kind of industry standard size foot thing going on where half of the office is the same shoe size, which is hilarious.
Really?
So if anyone's that interested, it's a UK 8.5, US 9.5.
Searching for Christmas presents here.
I think JP, Johnny, myself, a couple of the other guys, we're all this standard size. So I could actually share them around as well in the office,
which
is what I would do.
That's love.
So if Nike or On or, you know, Hoka or anyone are listening, then, you know, just in case they are.
Maybe it could be a situation where you give some free electrolytes to a company in exchange for free 8.5 UK sized running shoes for the rest of your life.
That would be an amazing deal for me. Yeah, absolutely.
Taryn, kicking this over to you. Andy's going with the lifetime supply of shoes. What would you want here?
This is a tough one because I'm not doing a lot of training, racing at the moment, but I'd probably go the bike.
Okay.
I love my roadie, but that's the only bike I've got at the moment, and a super bike would be pretty cool. That would maybe tempt me to get back on the race course sooner rather than later if I had a pretty sick bike.
If you had a pretty sick bike and you could pair that pretty sick bike with some electrolytes from Precision Fuel and Hydration and with a training plan from TriDot System, so we can just hook you up all around. All you got to do is win the super bike.
Do my own nutrition and, you know, Bob's your uncle. We're all good.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with the same choice here, Taryn. I created this question, so I thought about it for a little while. I mean, it's like you want to be the good guy and say that you would like to give free high-end wetsuits to all of your friends. But at the end of the day, you just don't have an opportunity that often to really upgrade your bike. It can be really, really tough to drop as bike prices keep going up and up and up and up and up. It can be really difficult to pull the trigger on a 5K, 6K, 8K, 10K, 12K bike all in one go. Andy, you're being smart and practical by opting for the run shoes in the long run to just win one of those sick looking $10,000 high-end super bikes that you see the pros riding. And just instantly have that to race around. That would be the dream. So guys, we are going to throw this question out to you, our audience. I'm excited to see what you have to say on this triathlon. Would you rather? So make sure you're part of the I Am Triadot Facebook group. We're going to throw this question your way. Would you rather win a super bike? Would you rather win free running shoes for the rest of your life? Or would you rather be the nice guy or gal and give all of your mates some good wetsuit stuff?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
With Andy joining me on the show today, I have to lead with the question, have you planned your nutrition strategy for your next race yet? If you're in need of some help, our friends at Precision Fuel and Hydration provide education, tools, and products to help you personalize your fueling plan. Want to know what pros like Leon Chevalier, Ashley Gentle, and Emma Pollant-Brown eat and drink to fuel their races? Check out the athlete case study section at precisionfuelandhydration.com. And once you go there, you can refine your own hydration and fueling strategy like these pros do as well. I use their strongest electrolyte drink, PH 1500, to help replenish my high sweat sodium losses, while the PF 30, PF 30 caffeine, and PF 90 gels have helped with my energy needs. Ultimately, the Precision Fuel and Hydration product range is designed to make it easier for you to track exactly what you're eating and drinking during races, and you can concentrate on just hitting your numbers. Don't forget, TriDot listeners get 10% off their first order of electrolytes and fueling products by using the code TRI10 at the checkout. Andy, Taryn, before we even talk about the trends, the fads, and the what's new, what are a few kind of time-tested core nutritional truths that we should just always know are true regardless of the fads that come and go? Andy, what do you think?
I think one of the big ones is I was actually up in Liverpool yesterday at Liverpool John Moores University with some of the researchers there, and they put a paper out a few years ago which was called Fuel for the Work Required, and it's a really seminal paper in sports nutrition around fueling athletes. And it basically, the premise behind it, very, very oversimplified, is that we all have a basic nutritional requirement day to day as human beings, and that when you do the amount of work that endurance athletes do, then you need to supplement that with additional carbohydrates, which are scaled to the volume and intensity of work that you're doing. And so and we're going to dig into some of these, you know, more detailed questions and debates around, you know, carbs for athletes, keto for athletes, all this sort of stuff. There's always these very extreme views, but their view and a very science-backed view is that, you know, you moderate the amount of carbohydrate that you're taking in, and it goes up and down based on the volume and intensity of training you're doing. And if you get that right, fuel for the work required, then it enables you to do the work that you need to do to get fitter and to get better. It allows you to recover from that work, and it sort of is essentially the optimal way to look at fueling. And it's moderation. It's not, you should always take loads or should always take none. So it's not an easy, snappy message to sell, but I think it's one of the core principles that we always try and apply anyway.
Yeah. So that is definitely a core nutritional truth that is true regardless of what fads or ads or new products come out on the marketplace. Taryn, what would you have to add to that?
Andy hit the nail on the head. Periodization is like triathlon nutrition 101, right? You have to understand how to do that to survive training for three sports. But I think starting this episode about core truths with some of the fundamentals is a great place to start, because we often forget about some of the foundations of what we need to be eating on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
And we
yeah.
get sidelined by shiny objects and, you know, the latest trends and fads and stuff that you can passively like hand money over for, but is it going to do anything to make you a better athlete or not? So taking a step back from that before we dive into those shiny objects, and thinking about what are our fundamentals of what you need to do on a day-to-day basis, because that's going to have a much bigger impact on your overall health and performance with what you can consistently do every single day. It's not this one tiny thing that you might implement for a race on race day or around a race. It's the small daily consistent behaviors and habits that you do every single day that'll make so much more impact on you. So carbs are your friend is a truth that we need to be comfortable with and not be carb phobic. And like Andy said, the message is not all the carbs and it's not none of the carbs. It's understanding how to eat them strategically to best support our training, and getting that right is really key to triathlon nutrition. The other thing that is not very sexy, which I talk about all the time, is eating enough fruits and vegetables. Like 6% of the Australian population, 8 to 10% of the American, and I think the UK, sorry, Andy, is even worse than that, don't eat enough fruits and vegetables on a day-to-day basis. And like, what is going on? Like, we're too busy worrying about all this weird and wonderful stuff that we don't actually focus on some of those foundations of what actually makes up a healthy, balanced diet. We're too busy focused on ketos and ketones and weird patches of, I don't know, blood glucose monitoring and stuff that we're going to talk about today. But let's like take a step back from that first and make sure we're doing some of those key things.
It might
first.
Be the Florida boy in me. I grew up in Central Florida, surrounded by strawberry fields and orange groves and that kind of stuff. But I think, Taryn, that fruit and vegetables are very sexy. And I'm a big fan of
working
them into my diet.
I was just going to say, I need to apologize on behalf of the UK for our appalling fruit and vegetable intake.
That's terrible.
I've got to say, I'm doing my best on that. I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. My children, they're pulling the average down, though. And, you know, Taryn, this is a totally different topic of conversation, but if you can teach me how to get kids to eat more fruit and vegetables, then we should have a side conversation about that for sure.
We could definitely do that. It's all about being sneaky and hiding it, but yes.
All right, I'm going to get us into our trends. Thank you guys so much just for kind of laying that groundwork right there and making sure that we're keeping in mind that in addition to all these things that we are talking about here today, there is just the core truths of fueling yourself for the workouts, for eating what you need to eat, just wholesome meals, fruits, vegetables, and making sure you're fueled for life and for sports. So with that, I will move us into trend number one that I want to hear about today. This is the pure amount of calories that athletes are starting to take in. Many pros are training their gut to tolerate close to 100 grams of carbohydrate per hour, a threshold previously believed to be far too much. Andy, as you work with the team from Precision Fuel and Hydration, and you guys work with the pros you sponsor, the pros you work with, what's going on here with this? Is taking in more carbohydrate for our training and racing, is this beneficial?
Yeah, it appears to be that way as a general rule. That isn't, by the way, me starting out with saying that, yeah, everyone who's listening to this should take more carbohydrate when they're racing and training. But if I look back 20 years ago to when I was getting some sports nutrition advice for racing Ironman for the first time, the recommendations on how much fuel you should take in were very, very conservative compared to the numbers that we're seeing athletes attack now. Interestingly, when I look back, that was coming from, you know, the best of the sports science knowledge at the time. And even then, some of the elite athletes that I was training with were doing very, very different things. Some of them were taking a lot more. But to me, as someone who was at that time, I'd just come out of my sports science degree. I looked at the evidence. I looked at what people were saying. And I thought, looks to me like these guys are overdoing it. And I'm going to do less than that. I can look back for sure and say I probably underfueled a lot of my long distance triathlon efforts because I was probably not leaning into quite enough of what was going on at the coalface with some of the top athletes and being a little bit more conservative and being a little bit less organized than I needed to be around that part of my fueling. What we're seeing now, and we try to bridge the gap between what's going on in the peer-reviewed literature, which is important, but it's often several years behind what's going on with elite athletes. So a lot of people that are listening and you guys will know that we do all these case studies with athletes. They're not always with elite athletes actually, but a lot of them are because that's who we happen to work with.
Some of them are with very average athletes from Dallas, Texas, who have 12-hour Ironman finishes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a fantastic case study if people want to go and look at that one, because we've got Harley's study from Ironman Texas on the website, everything he ate and drank throughout his first Ironman. And what we've done with those case studies is, so the process of how we develop them is we do very detailed interviews with athletes pre and post event, and we do this very, very quickly. So we'll interview them literally a day or two before the race to find out what their nutritional plan is for what they're going to take in. We interview them immediately after the race. Sometimes we even have Brad, who's our athlete ambassador guy, in the finish shoot, basically with his voice recorder, sticking it in their face, getting of the best memory recall that we can to really understand everything they ate and drank during that race. And we make some pretty accurate determinations from that on the amount of fluid people have drunk, the amount of sodium they've taken in, and the amount of carbohydrate they've consumed. And we use that for two things, really. One is to give those athletes pretty immediate feedback on where it looks like their performance, where that where their sort of nutritional plan or execution of that plan might have been beneficial, it might need working on for next time, so they get some actionable feedback. And then what we also do is we drop this data into our database. We create these case studies to try and show the rest of the triathlon community, okay, this is what's really happening with athletes at different levels, to give an appreciation of what people are taking in and how they've performed off of taking it in.
I really encourage people, if you're not already, go follow Precision Fuel and Hydration on social media. I think it's so interesting, Andy, when a race is over, whether it's the Ironman World Championships or whether it's another race from around the world, when one of your sponsored pros does the race, there's often their numbers of what they fueled is up within a couple hours or their finish time sometimes. And it's really interesting to see. And that's what we're seeing from the case studies you're pointing out, guys like Leon Chevalier and Fenella Landridge, who just had great races in Kona, as well as some others. Their numbers of carbohydrate they're taking in are just going up and up and up with every single race. These guys and gals that are taking on more carb, like what are they doing in their training to train their gut to handle that much calories while exerting themselves?
Yeah, they're training the gut for taking high amounts of carbs is a really important point, because when you see that someone like Leon's taking in over 100 grams of carb an hour, that's probably not something the average athlete can just step up and hope to do or need to do immediately. By taking in more carbohydrate in training, they learn, you know, both how it feels, that you get adaptations in the gut and in the body to facilitate higher rates of absorption and oxidization of carbohydrates. So what they're doing essentially is as you do with any aspect of physiology, if it's here and you want to nudge it to a higher place, then you look at where you are, you look at where you want to be or where you feel like you need to be, and you progressively work towards it. So particularly in long, hard brick training sessions, long, hard bike rides, long, hard runs, athletes like Leon and Fenella have done a lot of work in terms of making sure that they're following a nutrition plan, a fueling plan that is quite similar to what they're going to do in the race. That has, for me, has two major benefits. One is it enables them to sort of test and simulate what they're doing in training so that they know they're going to be able to tolerate it on race day. It's going to work for them. And the second thing is actually, again, looking back at my own sort of history with this and having worked with other athletes and seeing the same thing, there can be a tendency to like skimp on the fueling in some of those really big training sessions. It may be partly because of cost. Sports nutrition products, if you're going to use those specifically, are not cheap. And you might feel like you can get away with using a few less gels in a big bike ride than you might do on race day. But if you take that extra carbohydrate in, if you get the hydration absolutely on point, you get more out of the session you're doing. And importantly, you recover way, way faster afterwards, so you bounce back into training. So essentially what we're seeing now is far, far more emphasis on doing simulation type training sessions. The reason I was up in Liverpool yesterday was I wasn't with a triathlete, I was with an ultra distance runner who's focusing on the Western States 100, and he was over from the US doing simulation sessions in the altitude chamber and the heat chamber to simulate the challenges of Western States. And a lot of it was focused on then also practicing nutrition in that same environment, because trying to replicate and trying to go to a highly specific level of simulation to make sure you know exactly what you're doing before race day and your body knows exactly what it's doing is super important.
What a sport ultra running is, and just the things that those guys and gals put their body through. I mean, I know we put our bodies through a lot for Ironman, but they have a whole different beast of a race that they're taking on. So very, very fascinating to see the nutrition work that you're doing with a lot of ultra runners. Taryn, as you work with triathletes through the Triathlon Nutrition Academy, what are you teaching when it comes to just taking on something like 100 grams of carbs for a race? What are the trends that you're seeing with your average age groupers?
Yes, I definitely work with much more of the age group population these days than in the elite space. And for them, they need to focus on doing a lot of gut training to get to those sort of levels. The research we're seeing in this space is in the elite athlete, like an athlete that is very fit, very well trained, and is used to burning carbohydrate and breaking down and digesting carbohydrate when they exercise. That's a mad skill that you have to train and adapt to be able to do that. So in an age group, I'm not suggesting pushing intakes up over above 100 grams an hour, unless I'm dealing with like an elite 9-hour Kona type athlete, then we can have that conversation. But for typical age groupers inside the academy, they have no idea how to feel during a session at all until they get a bit of education. So it's just sort of stepping them with some foundations first around some targets of what they should be hitting depending on what type of session they're doing. And then, okay, now you've got a bit of experience with doing that and you can tolerate that. I'm going to teach you how to train your gut strategically for a key event, but there's probably one or two where we're hitting up like 90 grams an hour or around there. The majority of people are still much lower than that. And that's just that training of the gut. It takes a little bit of time. We don't actually really know how long it takes specifically. There's no kind of protocol as yet, but Andy can probably talk to this. It'd be individualized anyway. But it's getting them to start to think about that because fueling is really important. We know that. We burn way more carbohydrate per hour than we can ever tolerate digestion-wise. Our rate limiter is in the gut. You can increase your gastric emptying. So that's the gel or the sports drink or whatever moving from your stomach further along the gastrointestinal tract for digestion into the bloodstream. That part can kind of be trained and you can get better at that. But then we still need to get that fuel from the small intestine into the bloodstream. And we know that that's limited with those carbohydrate digestion channels or pumps or whatever you want to call them. So we need to do a few things to get our fueling up that high. We need to be a bit systematic and strategic around how we do that. But whether or not an everyday age grouper needs to be aiming for that, I think I actually did an episode on this. I think it's probably a mistake for a everyday age grouper that's just going out to kind of participate to think about going that high with their fueling unless they're well trained and they're fast and they are elite and they are used to digesting carbohydrate when they exercise. Because like I said, it is definitely a skill. It's something that you need to get used to and get better at doing that. Oxidizing carbohydrate while the blood is not in your stomach is something that you need to train. So just being mindful if you're an everyday age grouper that you can head that direction, but give it a bit of time and be strategic around that. The research we're seeing in this space and, you know, case studies that Andy is doing is definitely in an elite level athlete. And the more fuel you can get on board, the better, right? Like we saw that 2-hour marathon attempt many years ago and he bonked at 120 grams an hour in the marathon because they're oxidizing. Do you know the numbers, Andy? Like 300, 400 grams of carbohydrate an hour? It's insane.
Yeah, but well over 300 at that sort of pace. And yeah, absolutely. And that I think that's what, you know, we've alluded to, but it can give a skewed view to people who are not going as far and as fast. You know, we were going back to my ultra runner example from yesterday, working with this guy, although he's an elite runner right at the front of the field, when you're running for 15 or 16 hours, your intensity is a little bit lower than it is for an Ironman athlete who's at 8 hours. We think of them all as in ultra endurance, but that's kind of like half, it's double the time. And his carbohydrate consumption is probably coming down to closer to 60 or 70 grams an hour, along with supplementing with some other food, because although he's going for a very long time, the raw intensity is that little bit lower. So you definitely have to tune it. And that's going to be the same for an Ironman athlete. When we did our case studies from Kona, the average age grouper that we looked at, and to be clear, obviously the average age group level in Kona is high already because people have qualified to be there.
Sure.
We've tended to do case studies with those that are at the more pointy end of their age groups as well. But even so, we saw, I think, when we averaged it out, about 22% less carbohydrate in the age groupers than in the pros. Which is,
interesting.
I guess, what you would expect because the pros, you know, Leon's out there for less than 8 hours. Some of our, even our winning age groupers in the older age groups are out there for 12 or 13 hours. So you're not going to smash and you're not going to need to smash 110 grams of carbohydrate for 13 hours. That's it's very unlikely. That's going to be helpful if you do. On those sort of aggregate numbers, one thing we're starting to look at is now that we've got over, I think we're getting close to over 200 case studies in our database, we're going to start to publish a page on the site soon with the aggregate data building up in real time for 70.3, for marathon, for Ironman, and that kind of thing, to give people an appreciation for what those figures look like, because we've found that certainly these kind of conversations are common, and it's human nature. We all want to focus on the highest and the biggest numbers and what people are doing at the top end.
Gotta
actually
win.
Sometimes showing the range and showing the lower end of stuff, a really interesting one, if it's not too much of a digression, is that we've been working with Emma Pallant Brown for a number of years. Emma just got third at the 70.3 Worlds in St. George. It was really, really cold. For various practical reasons, that limited her ability to fuel, and she managed to get 28 grams of carbohydrate in per hour in a four-hour race and came third in the world. So you can perform remarkably well sometimes on what would not necessarily be classically seen as like optimal fueling. There's because fueling and hydration are definitely huge pillars that support performance, but there are a lot of other pillars that support performance. And in Emma's case, being insanely fit and one of the most ridiculously hardcore and determined athletes you'll ever meet will mean that you can do some pretty extraordinary things. We've seen her, we've had Emma getting up to 80, 90 grams of carbohydrate an hour in these races with some benefit, but she's just gone and managed to perform in some very unique circumstances at 30 grams an hour. So I think it's important to remember that, you know, there's a big range that can work for people here, and more is not always better.
Good point. Good point. Excellent.
A great reminder for all of us as we're seeing the social media posts fly out with Leon taking on 105 grams of carbs at per hour at Kona. And just to know that for the age grouper, largely you can admire what the pros are doing there, and you can understand, you know, they're training their gut for that, they're putting forth the effort that needs that much fuel, and then recognize that okay, we can dial that back something like 25, 30, 40% or more, even depending on our own paces. Andy, would you say that these higher end of carbohydrate intake per hour, is this, even if you're an elite, is this mainly for like 70.3 and full distance racing? Or would short course athletes benefit from more carbohydrate per hour as well?
Generally speaking, short course athletes are not going to need that high level of carbohydrate intake because you're much more in the zone where, you know, glycogen depletion. You know, we used to race an Olympic distance race on basically no fuel, pretty much. If it was less than 2 hours, it was almost certainly not optimal, but it's very doable if you're fit. And so 30, 60 grams, you know, yeah, if you carb load, exactly. That's a huge point to go back to the Emma thing. Emma does a phenomenal job in carb loading in the day before and the morning of the event. And it's amazing when you're tapered and carb loaded, it's amazing how far you can go on no fuel, actually.
Wow.
So, you know, in
not
Olympic
a strategy
distance,
to play with as an age group either.
No.
Just going to throw that caveat in there.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Olympic distance, we're typically seeing people take, you know, one, two, maybe three gels at the elite end. But if it's, we've seen though, and we've actually developed a product which is being used exclusively by some of our elite athletes in Olympic distance triathlon and marathon at the moment, which is basically a much stronger carbohydrate drink, where the delivery of carbohydrates in a way you can get in when you're breathing really hard is important. And hydration considerations less important, because as long as you get some liquid in, you're going to offset some of your sweat losses.
Well, that kind of begins to transition us, Andy, into trend number two that I want to talk about today. And this is that there's nutrition products coming out that just have certain mixes, certain makeups, where they are packing in more carbohydrate and more calories per serving than ever before. And so I kind of want to talk about this. I mean, there's different kind of carbohydrate dense fueling sources. There's hydrogels, there's complex drink mixes, Andy, like you're talking about. I mean, many brands have fuel sources that are packing in 60 to 100 grams of carb per serving. Taryn, how are brands able to get this much carbohydrate into a serving?
Well, the man that makes products can probably answer this better than me, but if you have a look at products, have a look at how many grams of products are in that packet. So take the Morton drink mixes. The 160 mix has got 40 grams of powder in it, and the 320 mix has got 80 grams. So it doubles the amount of powder in that single sachet to double the amount of carbohydrate per serving. So there's that cheat. I know the Precision Hydration Gel, the 90-gram gel, is 153-gram serving. So you've just got, you know, three gels packed in there in a bigger packet. So there's not a lot of witchcraft to that. Just make sizings and servings a little bit bigger. And then we've got products like Morton who have their hydrogel technology, which is just delivering that carbohydrate in a different way. I don't know if you want to dive into that technology in this sort of podcast, but that is another sort of way that we're starting to see products change and evolve the way that we are actually fueling ourselves.
Oh, very interesting. Now, Andy, not all the time, but I often, just by having a friendship with you guys, by having a brand partnership with Precision and TriDot, I often catch wind of new products coming out before they actually come out, and I'm kind of aware of certain things you guys are working on. I didn't know until this conversation that you had a drink mix that was packing in some more calories that some of your elites were using. So talk to us about just kind of Precision's efforts there, what you're developing, why you're developing that. What are the cases in which an athlete might want to use that versus the PF30 gels and PF30 drink mix?
Yeah. So with Taryn hit the nail on the head. If you want to get double the amount of carbohydrates into someone in a drink or a gel or whatever, you essentially have to double the amount of gel you give them, or double the amount of drink powder that you dilute into some water, because there is a carbohydrate drink mix is almost exclusively carbohydrate already. You can't sort of like magic more. There's a law of physics here that the molecules that you need to pack in have a certain mass, and you know you want 120 grams of carbohydrate per liter, then you're going to need double the amount of powder that you got to get 60 grams of carbohydrate per liter. So what we did when we were looking at, so we had a lot of requests from the elite athletes that we were working with for a more concentrated fuel source. The reason that our standard drink mix has around about 60 grams of carbohydrate per liter is that's a kind of theoretically around isotonic. When we've measured ours in the lab, it's actually quite hypotonic still, because we have so few additional ingredients in it. But it's less, the osmolality is less concentrated than in your blood, so it moves from the gut into the bloodstream relatively speedily. When you get a stronger drink, when you go hypertonic, so you put more mass in the drink than the molecules in your blood, then it can slow down dramatically the rate of transport of the fluids and the carbohydrates into your bloodstream. The thing is, in colder conditions, and when athletes are racing at a very, very high intensity, as I alluded to earlier, it can be really hard to, you may not need to, and you may not want to drink the volume of fluid you need to get the amount of calories that you need. And it may even be tricky to open gels, swallow gels. You've probably got to chase them down with some drink anyway. So what we basically observed in the field was that pro athletes were taking our drink mixes, mixing them stronger, and getting on really well with that. So All we've done is we've developed some very slight modifications to the drink mix. And we've actually removed things like in the electrolyte content entirely from that product in order to further reduce any additional elements of the mix to make it as simple as possible. And looked at, so we can get 120 grams of carbohydrate in a liter serving, or 60 grams in a 500 ml bottle. The osmolality is still slightly hypertonic, but it's not too bad. We've minimized the flavor, we've minimized as many other features as we can, and that's the strength that we sort of have tested it to. But we know that some athletes are mixing it a little bit stronger, some athletes are mixing it a little bit weaker, and playing around and finding out what works for them. And it's very condition dependent, it's very intensity dependent, but essentially putting more carbs in the drink mix is not something that works. We found fantastically well for really long distance events, because I think you and I talked about this on an early recording, was decoupling, you know, your hydration from your fueling makes a lot of sense when it's very hot or when you're going a very long distance, because as the demands change and move, if you're limited to just drinking what's in one bottle, you've got nowhere to go. If you're thirsty, yeah, you've got to drink more. And if you suddenly drink double, then you don't need and want double the carbs, and you're going to make yourself sick, and you're not going to have enough water, and vice versa. Yeah. As we saw in St. George, Emma had a relatively concentrated drink mix, but it was so cold, she barely touched her drink on the bike. And then what happens then is you don't get enough calories. So all that being said, this drink that we've got is proven very popular with people doing marathons. It's been very popular for Olympic distance triathlon because you can just have one bottle of it on the bike and get quite a lot of energy there. So, you know, going full circle, as Taryn said, there's no magic in it. We're just packing more in, and we're tweaking all of the little variables that we can to make it as palatable, as digestible as possible. The whole jumping in on the hydrogel thing, the research that a lot of other people have done just doesn't really show much if any of a measurable benefit to using hydrogels, you know, over having a matched dose of carbohydrate. So you could take 90 grams, 100 grams of carbohydrate an hour from pretty much any format, as long as you're using a glucose fructose mix, potentially if it's really high amounts. If you do that, you're not going to necessarily see a performance difference, whether that's in a hydrogel form or in a regular carbohydrate form. For me, if you get into the race day stuff, the fundamentals are knowing how much fluid sodium carbohydrate you need to take in, getting anywhere close to those numbers. Most people aren't doing that. If you're not doing that, banging it into a hydrogel format or paying, you know, two or three times the price for a gel that of some other regular form of carbohydrate to take in is just not necessarily all that smart or going to make all that much of a difference. And
interesting,
that's the problem for me. It's not the problem that there's not, you know, the hydrogel stuff is not implausible, that it might offer a very tiny edge to some people some of the time. But when you then take that tiny sliver of evidence, extrapolate it to say this is the best thing since sliced bread, then you confuse everyone and try and blind them with this science, when in actual fact, what they just need to still be focusing on the fundamental, which with carbohydrate, it's like, how much do I need and how much can I tolerate? Simple as that.
All right. So those were two trends that we've obviously camped out on for a good hot minute here in the main set. Trend number three has to do with how we monitor our energy levels. A new trend is blood glucose monitoring. Many of our listeners may have noticed lately a round patch on the arms of their favorite pros and tech-savvy age groupers. That patch is made by Super Sapiens, and I got to say, these things were all over Kona this year. There have always been ways to measure glucose, but it's never been this accessible to the everyday triathlete. We probably need to do a full-length episode one of these days on the Super Sapiens patch and what they're doing here with this. But for the sake of today, as we just kind of introduce our listeners to the current trends in tri nutrition, Andy, what do we need to know about these patches?
Yeah, these patches, they're not new. They're relatively new to athletes. They've been around for a while as a means to measure glucose levels in diabetics. That's where the technology originated from, because obviously diabetics either have a hard time or can't control their blood glucose levels other than by taking insulin. Whereas if you've not got diabetes, your body produces insulin to bring sugar levels down in the blood when you consume something sugary. So they give you a real-time estimate of what's going on in your blood, and you can see that on your phone, or these days you can even see it on your smartwatch or your computer head unit, whatever. So you can get a real-time reading. There's theoretically, there's some really, really useful information from that, because we know that, you know, big disturbances in blood glucose can be symptomatic of like over and under fueling. They can show you when they might be able to show you when you're potentially going to bonk and run out of energy and this sort of thing. So the theory of what they might do for an athlete, both in terms of learning and in real time, is very, very exciting. The downside, if there is one at the moment, is that the relationship between your sort of, is not as simple as like a fuel gauge for your body. Because in the body, you've got stored muscle glycogen, which you've got glycogen in the liver, you've got sugar circulating in the blood, and the dynamic way in which the body balances and corrects these things when you're exercising and eating is very complicated. And so I've used one of these patches quite a bit over the last, you know, probably a year and a half now. And at first, it's one of those things where at first you think it's telling you so much information, like everything you need to know. And then you very quickly realize that it's more complicated than that. And so we've seen the ways we've seen it work really well for people is testing out different food types and products to use, because sometimes if you consistently feel like you feel a bit rubbish eating one type of food or product, and then you can test it and look at your blood glucose response to that, you can learn quite a lot. The other thing is that there's this kind of, and this can be good and bad, but for me, there's a kind of what gets measured gets managed type approach. So we've definitely seen it as a way, it's encouraging people to focus more on fueling, which then potentially leads to better fueling, but it's not necessarily as linear as being able to say, well, you read these numbers, and then if they do this, you do this. If they do that, you do that. And there's two camps here. One says that, and I'm sort of lean a little bit more toward this camp, is that they're new. The data coming back from them, we don't fully understand yet. So it's really hard to, there's not a book been written yet on how to use real-time glucose monitoring to improve your athletic performance. I do believe that there's enough, that there will be over time, we'll learn more and more and the information will become more useful. But for the average athlete at the moment, if you're not particularly scientifically minded and into that, is that it, are you going to be able to strap it on and have it help you? You know, like, unlikely. It's
it sounds like that's the case for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Early adopters are using it and some of them are finding it very useful, and people, a lot of intelligent people are playing around with these things and seeing some plausible uses, but and it's not a bad thing that they're in the market by any stretch. It's a good thing to get new technology out there, but you can, if you're not careful, like with any aspect of this, you can overwhelm yourself in data. So there's cases where they're very, very useful and cases where they're not.
Yeah, it sounds like from where I stand, I'm going to let a couple other people smarter than me figure it out a little bit further before I probably spend the money and try to figure out what it could do for me. But thanks for that insight there, Andy. Taryn, have you had any of your athletes ask about this or start using this to see how their nutrition's impacting their training?
Not in the triathlon scene. It's happening a lot in cyclists at the moment in Australia. I have one client in mind who I think this would be perfect for. He's a type 1 diabetic, and we need to work on his fueling first. That's what we're doing inside the academy right now. He doesn't fuel at all. We need to get that right first. But I think having this data for him will just give him some confidence through his training sessions that he can push himself, because he knows that he's not going to bonk or hit the wall. But I'm with Andy, like, when is data too much data? Like, and if you see this monitor saying your glucose levels are going below 4, like you're heading to hypo, like, what are you going to do about that? Is that going to mess with your mind when you're trying to push in the back end of your race? Like, you're probably going to survive that. A lot of it is going to be mental at that point too. But for me, it's a bit of a shiny object at this point. We don't have good data. We don't know whether they're useful or not. And I think, like, I always go back to foundations, 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 foundations. We need to walk before we run. There are so many things that you need to do with your fueling first before you start dabbling in this stuff. But we love to spend money on gizmos and gadgets because they're cool and they're fun to play with.
It's a problem.
With the you've there are, you know, there's lots of companies doing this, and you've picked out Super Sapiens, and I think that's relevant, because what Super Sapiens are doing is putting a big emphasis and effort around sort of educating people on these products, and my interactions with them as a brand have been fantastic. You know, they're the ones, they've got some really good scientists, they've got some really good academics on their staff, and I think if people are interested in learning more about it, their website has some useful stuff. Is a good place to go and start looking, you know, to, because this stuff will be coming, and in the future I think everyone knows that non-invasive forms of glucose monitoring are probably going to be the norm. Your watch is probably going to be able to do this in the not too distant future, and so companies like this getting a jump on understanding how to interpret this data is going to be very useful to us all in the long run, I think.
Yep, no, very well put. And good to know that it's not just a shiny object they're trying to sell, but it's actually something that they are studying the data of and wanting to understand and wanting to empower athletes with that product. One last trend I want to talk about, and Andy, while we have you on, in my mind, precision fuel and hydration is the trend in the hydration space. What you guys do, I mean, there's a reason why Tridot has chosen to partner with Precision Fuel and Hydration as opposed to some other companies. And the way you are trying to educate athletes and empower athletes, doing the one-on-one consultations with athletes, sweat testing athletes, and then having products that work and work well for a wide variety of people, you, in my mind, are the trend in that space. That said, there's a couple new shiny objects, so to speak, that have entered the space that I kind of want to just get your take on. There's a couple companies. Gatorade is one. I forget the name of another, but I had a Facebook ad for something else that's a patch that you put on your arm, and it can measure your sodium loss in a certain amount of sweat. What is kind of your take on these new toys in the hydration space?
Yeah, the real time or patch based sweat monitoring is definitely coming. That's a trend that's been on the horizon for a number of years. I think in some ways COVID set it back because a lot of those things are still in lab based testing format. So okay. There was a lot of testing that couldn't go on for a couple of years, and that's delayed the launch of some products, but we've been keeping an eye on them for good reason for a long time. And in many ways, I see that as a huge positive because we've been sweat testing athletes for over a decade now in order to give them an idea of individualizing sweat losses, because the whole reason that the debate around hydration for athletes is so polarized is that there is definitely no one size fits all answer. Some people can get away with drinking very little and probably drinking just water. Other people need to drink incredible amounts of fluid and take in incredible amounts of sodium to meet their individual needs. And those needs are all over the map. So being able to monitor sweat loss and sodium loss in real time is only a good thing in my view, because it will allow athletes to understand their individual physiology in their environment and in their events so they can get that bit right. Because we've spent a lot of this podcast talking about fueling, and fueling actually, although there's a reasonable amount of individual nuance to it, you can throw a pretty small blanket over the range of recommendations you need to make to athletes once you know a little bit about how fast and how far they're going. With hydration, you can definitely not. You know, in Kona, in the small amount of elite data that we got, we saw Sarah Crowley drink only just over half a liter per hour through the event, and Leon drank over 1.3 liters per hour during the event, and we saw another athlete drink nearly 1.5 liters an hour through the event, so 3x what Sarah drank. We saw differences in sodium consumption that were about eightfold as well. So, and that is totally what we'd expect, because losses in sweat and sodium are so massively variable. Coming back to the patches and things, that therefore I see that all as being really useful when that information is available to athletes. The problem with where that technology is at the moment is that I haven't seen anything that works consistently very well, and the recommendations that software is trying to make off the back of the outputs of those products are really, really poor at the moment. Because the people who are developing them in general appear to be more on the technology side. So they're trying to develop a piece of tech to give an output. And a lot of them are making the assumption that then taking that output and translating it into a recommendation for an athlete will be easy. You lose X, we tell you to drink Y or whatever. I've heard one of the companies talking about, you know, having voice activated stuff in your headphones that tells you need to drink X amount, or like that is, for me, is absolute nonsense. You know, we are never going to be in a position, as far as I can tell, where you're going to have a device that will tell you exactly when and how much to drink. You know, a sweat patch on your arm is not measuring all of the thousands of data points that your brain is constantly monitoring in your body that tell you whether you need to drink or not.
So, yeah, great point.
But what these patches are going to allow us to do is get more individualized sweat data. It's going to democratize it, so it's available to a lot more people, and it's going to allow us to get it, you know, throughout endurance events potentially. So no one knows what happens to someone's sweat profile 7 hours into an Ironman yet. There just haven't been the studies done. So what we do at the moment is we take baseline data and we extrapolate it. That's never going to be as good as measuring real-time data in the field. So we're working with a few companies that, you know, we kind of quite agnostic in that space, in that we don't want to be, you know, be a technology provider here. What we're going to try and do is work with the companies that are producing data from sweat patches in order to interpret it into some realistic recommendations for athletes, because I think that's where the magic bit is, really. Not to downplay the technological challenge that's got to be overcome, but that's someone else's challenge. Our challenge is translating the information so that athletes understand how to use it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
I don't know about you, but I love hearing and reading about race reports. So I'm really looking forward to today's cool down, because we have two people who not only completed a full distance triathlon, but they completed it attached together for the whole race. Now, if that is not a superhuman feat, I do not know what is. Joining me today is Jason Verbracken, who is fondly known as Verby in the TriDot community, and David Heckman, who is a triathlete competing in the PC division for the last few years. These two rock stars completed Ironman California this year, with Verby acting as David's guide. So let's get this started. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And Verby, Dave, I can hardly wait to hear about your experience of racing together.
Hi, Vanessa. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Vanessa. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here. So
great. So how do you two know each other anyways?
I know David from his husband, Andrew, is how I originally met him. And I met Andrew basically through TriDot / extreme races. Andrew has done Alaska Man. We both raced together in Iceland Extreme. So I met David through Andrew.
Now, Dave, if there is anyone that I would want to do a full try with, it would be Verby, because he's funny, he's super encouraging, and no big deal, but he pushes like 5 watts per kilo on a zone 2 ride. So right there, that would be a good reason. So did you train together before the race?
Yes, we did. Not super lot, but what did we get in? 2 bike rides, I think?
Yes, 2 bike rides we got in.
That is not very much. Wow. That I was expecting that you had trained for months beforehand, but you literally were on the same bike for 2 rides. That's crazy. Dave, can you tell us what kind of visual impairment you have?
Sure. So I was born with cataracts, which were removed when I was 2 months old. So that's left me with if you measure it, it comes out at 2200, which qualifies as legally blind, which I'm actually really lucky because I have enough sight where I can still function on my own. I can actually ride a single bike, but there's no way I could do the swim in a triathlon on my own. There's just no way I could pop up and out of the water and actually find the buoys to side on. That's where I'm at. So, and sometimes I feel almost bad because, for the run, as long as Jason's there saying, hey, we're just going along and, we got a like a U-turn coming up or something like that. It's not like he has to actually guide me through the turn, which is kind of cool.
That's a little bit more manageable than what I was anticipating. So that's great. I'm really happy for you.
I was just going to say my ideal bike ride is, if I'm out on my own on a single bike, is, if we go out in a group and I'll just tuck behind about 3 bike lengths, 3-4 bike lengths back behind somebody. That way I have if it's a road that I don't know, then I have a really good idea of what's coming up. So
Verby, I think this question might be interesting for you to answer because you have had the opportunity to race on your own and also with another person. So on the emotional side of things, in terms of the highs and lows, or maybe being at your best or potentially your worst, is it easier or harder to race alongside someone else?
Well, it was easy again racing with David because he's so easygoing, never complained, never anything. He's ready to go. For me, before the race, I was more nervous than usual just because I didn't want to mess anything up for him. I mean, I have no problem screwing up my own race. Great, it's on me. But if I did something stupid or ran us into something, or it's all on me, and that's not that's affecting David's race and how much he's trained for it. So, you know, before we started actually going and got in the water, I was nervous, like, all right, don't screw up anything today. This is on you. Make sure this is, you know, this is David's race, and let's do the best we can for him. And so that was obviously a whole new thing for me, where before it's like, run yourself in the ground, mm-hmm. run into a tree, whatever. it's your own fault then, dummy, you know. But it was definitely making sure David is good and that everything went smooth.
That is a lot more pressure. I sometimes play this game with my kids, and I call it best worst. So when I'm trying to pull it out of them to talk about what they had done at school or how their day went, I always say, let's play best worst. So let's do it. What is the best thing about racing while tethered to another person? And what's the worst thing?
Oh gosh, we already talked about the best part, and that's being on the bike, because you get to talk to somebody. That I think is,
yeah, right.
You know, that for me is one of the best parts. Let's see. The worst thing is probably in the swim. Sometimes we'll get too close together, so then you get inadvertently smacked in the face. But, you know, that's going to happen in the swim anyway. But
yeah, I was actually wondering what it's like to swim tethered to another athlete. What does that feel like?
For me, it was, I was just nervous. Obviously David's sighting off of me. So if all of a sudden I feel like he's getting too close to me and I would like start going, say, to my right, well, he's just going to follow me. He doesn't know I'm just trying to move over because he's getting close. So thankfully, Andrew had kind of given some direction before, like, hey, you just got to physically move David if he's coming too close, like push him away. And, you know, there's nothing else you can really do. So it definitely is challenging. And there was one point where the two rivers converged on each other, and the buoy was we were kind of getting ready to miss the buoy, and the current was taking David, and there were people that started getting in, like the tether stretch out, and people were trying to swim in between us. And I literally had to get over and grab David and pull him, like, no, we got to move this way. Because again, the current was taking us and people were trying to go in between us then. And so, yeah, it was definitely, the rest of the swim I felt went really smooth and went great. That was just the one part where I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, that sounds like it could have been a little bit of a tense moment. Did you pre-plan some kind of communication strategy throughout the race at all?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So for the swim, you know, we had to know, you know, how are you going to tell me when it's time to turn? So, you know, we worked that out beforehand. You know, and it's usually just a couple taps on the shoulder or something like that.
Okay.
You know, but for, you know, for the bike and the run, we pretty much, you know, it was just, okay, we got to communicate on the bike. So, you know, all the stuff that we already talked about as far as, you know, need to know if you're going to go for a drink, need to know if I'm going to go for a drink, that kind of stuff. You know, the run pretty much just works itself out. At least for me anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you have to actually do a little bit of pre-planning for that.
Yeah.
Hey, Vanessa, can I get in a plug here for a second?
Oh yeah.
You mentioned about people perhaps being interested in becoming a guide. So I'm in Southern California and I have a tandem that is sitting in my garage that needs a captain. So if anyone is interested in taking it for a spin, if that's something that you're interested in, feel free to hit me up.
Well, I wish I was in California.
I tell you what, that bike is fast also. Think of it this way. You got two people on one bike pushing double power. Any flat or slight downhill, and it picks up, it's like a rocket ship. I literally, when we were heading out on the bike before the wind had hit us, we were on a straight with a slight downhill, and we were, I think we were both zone two heart rate. I mean, I was almost zone one, and we were going 27 miles an hour. I mean, just like it was nothing. I mean, we were just basically on your left the whole time, because we were just flying by everybody. That, I mean, it was, again, it's a rocket ship. It's so fast. It's so much fun.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
It really goes.
Well, that's it for today, folks. Big thanks to Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration and Taryn Richardson from the Triathlon Nutrition Academy for talking us through four trends in tri nutrition. Shout out to UCAN and Precision Fuel and Hydration for partnering with us on the show today. Head to UCAN.co to check out the steady energy sources of UCAN, and go to PFNH.com to learn more from Andy's team about fueling and hydrating for your next race. Thanks for listening. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.